Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Sunday, September 6th. Maintaining integrity. Operators should maintain focus on operational integrity during downturn. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Operational integrity has long been a focus for Permian Basin oil and gas operators, but as they react to the industry's current economic reality, they are urged not to lose sight of that focus. Quote, if prudent operators follow their operational integrity guidelines, they minimize the risk of an environmental event or safety hazard, Dan Welch, co-owner and chief executive officer of WDS Global Partners, said in a phone interview. Those operators also will set the stage for more effective operations as the economy improves and oil and gas activity begins to increase again, he said. Welch listed three critical components of operational integrity. Systems and equipment, ensuring they are correctly designed, properly maintained and operated, and critical safety systems are also maintained. Processes, ensuring companies have the proper processes and procedures in place and prioritized, and that their staff understand those procedures and their importance. People, making sure they are competent and properly trained to be proficient at their jobs and understand how the company wants them to operate and follow those procedures. Welch said people and training should be the top priority and that in a downturn, safety and training budgets should never be cut. Quote, a lot of times, in my experience, once you get to the approval level, those managers don't fully understand procedures and what the operations people need. They just say to cut X amount of dollars, and people are reluctant to challenge that in times of layoffs or cutbacks, Welch said. Management should foster an environment that encourages personnel to challenge those cuts, he said, or to point out small incidents that could build up into one large incident. Managers can't manage if they're not aware of issues, he said. Quote, operational integrity means brand reputation, environmental safety, worker safety, and health, he said. One incident could cost brand reputation and you suffer financial disaster as a result, end quote. No one, he said, quote, can afford a blowout, an environmental disaster, or personnel injury, end quote. He recommends regular audits, preferably unannounced, performed either by company personnel who understand the critical needs of the company, or a third party, such as WDS Global. Quote, the way we do an audit is we focus on the people. Are they competent and accountable? And the equipment and facilities, procedure and processes, and safety. We also look at emergency response, incident response, investigation, and follow-up, he said. If a company changes operating plans or a piece of equipment, did the technical people approve that change? End quote. Hazard evaluation and management is also reviewed, he said, to see if a company has discussed all hazards and what to do if those hazards actually occur, and if their personnel understand the hazards of their job. Quote, it's all about people, Welch said. His concern is what is known as the big turnover, where industry veterans with decades of experience are retiring or being laid off, leaving the industry with a significant experience gap. Quote, now you have people drilling shale wells that have never experienced drilling high-temperature, high-pressure wells, he said. Amid that experience gap, he said, quote, The only thing you can depend on is good policies, good procedures, good training, and good mentorship. Without that, you're reinventing the wheel. That brings us back to operational integrity." End quote. PBPA Advisor, Intent of Endangered Species Act has been lost over time. The story was written by Mella McEwen. When the Endangered Species Act was signed into law by then-President Nixon in 1972, its intent was to protect endangered species with the intention of helping them recover and removing them from the list. Quote, "It was not some prolonged protection, but to get the species healthy, recovered, and off the list," said Chris Kearney, who serves the Permian Basin Petroleum Association as a consultant on endangered species involving the Permian Basin, including the dunes sagebrush lizard and the lesser prairie chicken. But over the years, the act has become weaponized by groups whose real motivation is to shut down industrial activity, said Kearney, who addressed the act during the weekly Oil Field Strong webinar presented by OTA Compression, OTA Environmental, Chimark, and the PBPA. Quote, "There is no question there are conservation groups and environmental groups that sincerely have preservation of species as their motivation and also understand the need for economic activity," he told the reporter Telegram by telephone following the webinar. "But there are some groups that have weaponized the act by seizing on its requirement that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service respond within 60 days to a petition to list a species. Quote, "They knew full well that the service can't respond given the backlog," Kearney said. "That 60-day deadline is no longer a reflection of the demand on FWS personnel or the regulatory landscape," he said. Ben Shepherd, president of the PBA, said, quote, "If they're truly interested in species, they should prioritize conservation of the species and go to the Fish and Wildlife Service and say, we recognize you don't have the manpower or resources to list every species, so let's cooperate on prioritizing the most endangered species, not file petition after petition, knowing the service wouldn't meet the deadline," end quote. For some groups, no compromise is enough, so they use the courts to try to limit oil and gas activity, Shepherd said. Quote, "We try to work with them within those parameters," he said. Kearney praised the proactive efforts of organizations such as the PBPA to put together conservation plans to preserve endangered species while allowing oil and gas activity to continue. The PBPA's work on crafting candidate conservation agreements with assurances for species such as the lizard and the lesser prairie chicken can offer roadmaps for private-public partnerships to protect species while providing tangible, measurable results, he said. Shepherd pointed to the PBPA's work on crafting a CCAA for the lesser prairie chicken that has the participation of over 170 oil and gas companies and over 6 million acres across multiple states under conservation. Participants, primarily oil and gas companies, have contributed $65 million in conservation funds for the chicken. Shepherd said, quote, "far more than the government could pony up," end quote. Those funds go to landowners, farmers, and ranchers to pay them to implement conservation measures on their property. It's a win for the bird, whose population has grown from 18,000 to over 40,000, and for businesses that get to continue their operations. Quote, "That's why we're engaged on several fronts, the lizard, the chicken," said Shepherd. "Any conservation plan needs to be updated," he said, "and in the case of the lizard, the rise of frac sand mining operations in West Texas, primarily in the lizard's habitat, prompted the need for an updated and improved plan." Following a petition to list the lizard, the FWS agreed the lizard may warrant listing and took public comments on a proposed CCAA that would be administered by Kenyon Environmental. If implemented, the CCAA would serve as rules of the road to allow businesses to operate while conserving species, Kearney and Shepherd said. Kearney said concerns about possible species listings have an impact on economic activity, setting as an example a utility abandoning plans to build wind turbines to provide electricity, and another utility modifying where it built turbines just on the potential of a dune sagebrush lizard listing. Quote, "The point is, there are industries and entities that make decisions on what actions to take when it comes to habitat that are not in the public square," Kearney said. "What's at stake for us, because of the weaponization of the act, is the goal of some to halt all oil and gas and other actions on land. That could be devastating to the Permian Basin and other areas," end quote. "The PBPA and its members take the issue seriously," said Shepherd, adding that he hopes CCAAs protecting the lizard and the lesser prairie chicken will be durable enough to protect those species while also protecting the right of oil and gas and other industries to continue their operations. Microseismic monitoring helps optimize fracturing multi-pad drilling. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Pioneering wildcatters gambled on what oil and gas riches lay underground. Technological advances have made that less of a gamble, giving oil and gas producers a clearer picture of the subsurface as they prepare to drill wells. Those advances are apparent in microseismic monitoring and how it is used. Quote, "The number one change is around hardware," said Faraz Adil, BD Technical Manager, Permian Basin with Halliburton, in a phone interview. "Microseismic monitoring now has the ability to pick up additional microseismic events with the addition of fiber optic lines and treatment wells," he said. "Second change is advances in software and visualization," he said. Quote, "Historically, it's been a technology where you do the job and then sit and wait days or weeks for the data to be processed. Now we're able to provide real-time visualization. That's a big leap. We're able to give customers the opportunity to make changes in real time. It's a diagnostic tool made more hands-on," end quote. Microseismic monitoring is just one diagnostic tool, along with acoustic monitoring, which can provide large amounts of data and drive more accuracy in terms of confidence in that data, Adil said. The technology monitors the impact of hydraulic fracturing and completions processes and allows customers to change frac or completion designs in real time, changing frac volumes between stages. It also helps drive the accuracy of automation, improving the accuracy of shooting fluids in a well to help optimize frac and completion designs. But it has evolved beyond that to help the industry monitor stacked laterals and communication between parent and child wells as the industry shifts to multi-well pad drilling. "The heterogeneity of the rock in the Permian is insane," Adil said. "There's differences in rocks in different areas, and we need to learn and adjust as quickly as possible. We don't want production from child wells or parent wells to go down. Production in child wells can go down 20% to 30% if they're not completed correctly," end quote. While the industry is in a sharp downturn, Adil said he sees operators using the time to understand and use diagnostic technology to make their programs extremely lean. "And that will pay dividends when activity begins to increase," he said. Quote, "The focus is on capital discipline, but to achieve that, you need data and insight," he said. To be able to do that in real time lets operators be more disciplined. Quite a few operators are using this time to be in learning mode. There's not really any capital to drill 200 wells, but if diagnostics can capture data that can let operators be better prepared when things turn around, that puts them ahead of the learning curve. End quote. Matador Resources starts up Black River Processing Plant. Matador Resources Company and its midstream affiliate, San Mateo Midstream, announced the completion and successful startup of the expansion of San Mateo's Black River Cryogenic Natural Gas Processing Plant in Eddy County, New Mexico. The expansion of the Black River Processing Plant adds an incremental designed inlet capacity of 200 million cubic feet of natural gas per day to the previously existing designed inlet capacity of 260 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, for a total designed inlet capacity of 460 million cubic feet of natural gas per day. The expanded Black River Processing Plant supports Matador's exploration and development activities in the Delaware Basin and is expected to gather and process natural gas from Matador's state line asset area and from the Stebbins area and surrounding leaseholds in the southern portion of its Arrowhead asset area. The Black River Processing Plant currently processes natural gas from the company's Rustler Breaks asset area and also provides natural gas processing services for a number of other San Mateo customers in the area. Matador has also secured firm transportation via pipeline and fractionation for all anticipated natural gas liquids and firm transportation via pipeline for all residue natural gas volumes, including those attributable to the newly increased inlet capacity delivered at the tailgate of the Black River Processing Plant. San Mateo is also nearing completion on the construction of approximately 24 miles of large diameter natural gas gathering pipelines between the Black River Processing Plant and Matador's state line asset area, as well as approximately 19 miles of large diameter natural gas gathering pipelines between the Black River Processing Plant and the greater Stebbins area. In addition, San Mateo is nearing completion on the construction of approximately 19 miles of various diameter crude oil pipelines from certain points of origin in Eddy County to the existing San Mateo interconnect with Plains Pipeline LP and Eddy County. These various pipelines are expected to be placed in service at various times from early to mid-September 2020. Matador recently initiated flowback operations on its five Leatherneck wells in the greater Stebbins area, all 2-mile laterals as anticipated. The company also remains on track to begin turning to sales the 13 Boros wells, all 2-mile laterals, drilled and completed in the state line asset area in early September 2020. The Boros wells are expected to be turned to sales in a staggered fashion of 3 to 4 wells at a time throughout September and into early October. These projects reflect Matador's tightly integrated strategy of growing its exploration and production and midstream businesses together, as well as the planning, execution, and hard work of the Matador and San Mateo teams to achieve the goals the company set 2 years ago in terms of production and reserves growth, midstream expansion, and improved capital efficiency. Here are some energy briefs. Phillips 66 Partners announced that its subsidiary, Gray Oak Pipeline LLC, is launching an open season to solicit shipper commitments for services from West Texas on the Gray Oak Pipeline. The open season will provide an opportunity for interested shippers to secure long-term crude oil transportation with Gray Oak under binding transportation services agreements. There will be new takeaway capacity from West Texas and a new destination in Victoria County, Texas. This is expected to be placed in service in the first half of 2022. The open season commenced September 1st. NGL Energy Partners LP has signed a long-term extension and expansion of its acreage dedication with an existing customer. The extension of this agreement is with a leading investment-grade independent producer customer operating in Lee and Eddy Counties, New Mexico, within the Delaware Basin. The new agreement increases acreage dedication by 22,000 acres, increasing the new total dedicated acres with this customer to approximately 122,000 acres, and extends the term through 2027.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 20. The Buffett Indicator Kicks In, by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. The tech-heavy NASDAQ composite dropped nearly 5%, its biggest one-day percentage decline since June 11th, in a reversal of a rally that has taken the S&P to new highs. From the Wall Street Journal. The Buffett Indicator is a ratio of the Wilshire 5000 Stock Index, all the stocks that matter on the NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange, versus the gross domestic product of the USA. One can view this on my web blog at professorelam.typepad.com. It broadcast a buy signal in 1982 around 4. The stocks were trading at less than half the GDP. It telegraphed highs at 1.4 in early 2000, 1.1 in fall 2007, and this past week, a new high around 1.8. Stocks are worth 80% more than the entire output of goods and services produced in the USA. We then wrote here that the markets had peaked June 8th. But a grand supercycle high pressed on. The NASDAQ 100 tacked on another 3,000 points above that level, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average and S&P pretty well recovered to the February highs. This column spent the summer warning that the overweighting of the FANG, Facebook et al. Stocks, meant more and more narrow breadth, even as the averages recorded new highs. Thursday, Stuart Varney was interviewing an economist, confidently predicting Dow Jones 32,000 by Christmas. In the next few minutes, the Dow Jones dropped 800 points. I would remind readers of Richard Fisher's prediction in summer 1929. Fisher was a Yale professor. Stock prices had reached a permanently high plateau. He lost $8 to $10 million in the ensuing sell-off. The reality is that only the U.S. markets have been making new highs. Emerging markets from India to Mexico shrank from 24% to 18.9% last quarter. United Air is cutting 16,000 jobs. American Airlines is cutting 83,000 U.S. flights for October, 55% less than a year ago. And such cuts have a reverse multiplier effect. This means fewer rent cars, hotel rooms, and restaurant meals, not to mention further decreases in taxicabs and such. And we had a let them eat cake moment this week, with Nancy Pelosi defying her own ban on hair salons and then accusing the owner of setting her up. The oil field is shrinking before our eyes. ExxonMobil's plan to produce 1 million barrels a day in the Permian is toast. Schlumberger sold its fracking equipment, thereby exiting the business. More bankruptcies continue as a result of amassing too much debt in the boom year of 2014. Refining margins worldwide drop from $7.50 per barrel to about $1.50. International oil shares are dropping a couple of bucks, threatening to take out fragile support. Meanwhile, the experts suggest this is just a needed pullback in overheated tech shares. I suspect it is an overdue high, finally registering a grand supercycle top, dating back to summer 932, when the Dow Jones bottomed at 41.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, September 7th, 2020. This article is entitled, Saudi Arabia Cuts Pricing for Oil Sales to U.S. Asia, by Anthony DePaola and Salma El-Wardani, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia cut pricing for oil sales to Asia and the U.S. for October shipments, a sign that the world's biggest exporter may see fuel demand wavering amid flare-ups in the coronavirus. State oil producer Saudi Aramco is cutting its benchmark Arab Light crude more than expected and lowering the grade to a discount for the first time since June for buyers in Asia. It's the second consecutive month of cuts for barrels to Asia. Aramco will also trim pricing for lighter barrels to Northwest Europe and the Mediterranean region. Aramco is reducing pricing to Asia for October shipments of the light grade by $1.40 a barrel to 50 cents below the regional benchmark. The company was expected to pare pricing by a dollar a barrel to a 10-cent discount, according to a Bloomberg survey of 8 traders and refiners. Oil demand has plunged this year as the pandemic forced governments to lock down economies, airlines to cancel flights, and workers to stay at home. Saudi Arabia joined with Russia and other producers in the OPEC Plus coalition to make record cuts in production, taking about a tenth of global supply off the market. Crude prices have more than doubled since April to around $45 a barrel, but are still down more than 30% this year. The Saudis had previously supported the rally by raising pricing each month from June to August. However, demand from refineries has softened due to weak profits from turning crude into gasoline and other fuels. Even as economies began to recover, swollen stockpiles, rather than supplies of fresh crude, absorbed much of the increase in demand. Saudi Arabia usually sets the tone for pricing decisions by other Middle Eastern suppliers, including Iraq and the United Arab Emirates, the second and third largest producers in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 53 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, September 5th, 2020, local. Welcome, Art. Jennifer Kiriakou creates a chalk drawing on the sidewalk outside Frank's Elementary on Sunday evening. She and other parents and students did the chalk artwork to welcome new pre-K students to school Monday. Exhibit connects MC, Washington State University. A new art exhibit at Midland College, Here and There, features work from artists who have a connection to Midland, Odessa, Here, and Pullman, Washington, There. Every participating artist attended graduate school at Washington State University. Michael Richardson, the exhibit's curator and associate professor of art at MC, said the two geographical locations are connected through friendship and mentorship. While some of the artists' ties to WSC or at WSU are more direct, there are quite a few of us who went to undergraduate school at UTPB, Richardson said. Those artists connect through friendships made in Pullman and have been invited to the area as visiting artists. Participating alumni include Daikin Asakawa, Hector Hernandez, Michael Hubbard, Brett Lisney, Brett Michael Murray, Squeak Meisel, Nathan Orozco, Diana Ortiz, Richardson, Chris Stanley, and Molly Wicks. The exhibit will be on display at the Allison Fine Arts Building McCormick Gallery through October 4th, and also may be viewed virtually at imgur.com/gallery/LOT62GF. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. In addition, the Health Department will have immunization clinics 9 a.m.